Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
From the Lamb de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 24th day of September, 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes at Stewart Peterson right here in Champaign County. Take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility near Logansport, Indiana, and discuss the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Along the way today, we'll update the agricultural news and hear about the 10th annual JCI conference that's in China this week. U.S. Soybean Export Council has a member there. We'll discuss that during this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's take a look at the numbers as they finished up in Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon, up 4 cents in the nearby corn. Futures at $3.29.5 for the day. The March contract there at $3.42.25, 4 cents higher. And the May futures at $3.50.75, up 4 cents. July contract $3.58, up four. September up four as well at $3.65.5. And next year's December, $3.25 higher. That finished at $3.75.5. From the soybean pit, nearby contract at $9.36.75, a half cent lower for the day. January, a penny and a half higher. Actually, November was up a half. January was up a penny and a half at 9.45 at a quarter, and the March at 9.52 at a half, a penny and a half higher. May futures at 9.60 up two, and July futures 2.25 higher at 9.65 and three quarters. Next year's November beans at 9.54 and a quarter, also up 2 cents. Bean meal futures at 3.1640 down 70 for the day, and the bean oil 39 cents higher at 32.65. Live cattle futures from the CME Group finished 30 cents lower at 155.15 in the October contract. Feeder cattle in the October at 230.37.5 were up 22.5 cents, and the lean hogs on the day finished 55 cents lower for 100 pounds at $107.32.5. Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org, willag.org. We post all of our agricultural programming each and every business day in its entirety. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures for the afternoon at $93.40, up $1.48 for the day. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.69.2, that's up 0.9 cents. And gasoline in the RBOB wholesale price at $2.66.6, 3.7 cents higher. Natural gas at $3.91.5, up 9.9 cents. And ethanol futures not available. Oh, there they are, a penny, $1.60.9, and they are down 0.8 cents. Dow Jones Industrial Average at 17,133 on its last trade, up about 170 points for the day. Gold futures around $1,216, down $4.75, and the U.S. dollar trading 0.381 higher at 85.16. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service. For the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon, sunny skies, a high of 76 degrees. Partly cloudy this evening and a low of 52. Tomorrow mostly sunny and a high near 79. And then on Thursday evening, partly cloudy and a low of 53. Sunny skies on Friday, a high of 79 degrees again. Friday night, mostly clear and a low of 54. Saturday, sunny and 79. And Saturday night, partly cloudy and 56. On Sunday, sunny skies and 80 degrees. Sunday night, partly cloudy and 58. And Monday, mostly sunny skies and 77. Monday night, mostly cloudy and 57. And on Tuesday, next week, partly sunny skies and 76 degrees. Hey, have you signed up yet for our November Farm Assets Conference? I hope so. If not, though, visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. We'll have 12 of our regular panelists plus special presentations on crop insurance, the farm credit, and on what's happening with the farm bill.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and drydown data, is at AgriGold.com.
It is September the 24th, Wednesday afternoon. Let's check in now with Jackie Vegas. She's at Stewart Peterson right here in Champaign County and will help us take up the futures markets and the trade in Chicago for the afternoon. Jackie, thank you so much for taking the time with me. I want to start out with the FSA acreage figures because these have bounced around in the marketplace for about 3 years now, each and every year. The preliminary numbers come out in monthly assessments from time to time. We have had a couple of sets so far this year, and they have pointed, at least to this time, towards fewer acres than many had expected, though I'm hearing some different things about that in the marketplace. What do you hear?
Well, it's very interesting. You know, I looked at those numbers and thought that they seem to be awfully low in contrast to other years when you look at a percentage of the expected crop. So in looking around, there's no penalty for not certifying your acres this year for FSA like there had been in the past due to the Farm Bill timing. And I made some calls to some of my bigger clients, and I just said, you know, do you realize this? And they said, oh, yeah. Yeah, there's we don't have to certify. I haven't certified yet because I'm going to wait. If I need to change something, if in the past I have to pay a fee, and now I can change and I don't have to pay a fee. So I'm just plain not going to turn them in until later on. And so, you know, some of the implications that the August and September report had, you know, are certainly don't seem to be bearing out as to a real good indicator for what actual final acreage is going to be. Talk about throwing another wrench, you know, into the mix. But what I understand, you can certify right up until December and still be part of the Farm Bill next year.
Well, that should be interesting. I guess we'll find out more once the October crop production numbers come out, because that's usually the month in which USDA makes changes. But they will have to be aware of this as well in order to get an acreage figure that's fairly accurate. And I suppose we wouldn't really see a good number until we get the final numbers in January from the United States Department of Agriculture.
That's true. That's very, very true. And, you know, when you looked on Monday night on the crop progress, you know, and you looked at how slow harvest is, you know, some people said, oh, my goodness, you know, they're way behind. But I don't think it's a matter of being way behind, at least in the guys that I've been talking to. It's just there's so much crop there. It's going slower than it's gone in years past. And so I would expect that we're going to lag behind any of our normal years as we go along. And I guess we're going to do the same thing in acres.
All right. Well, let's take up some of what's been happening in the field. Have you been getting yields from around the Midwest?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You know, when you look at some of the numbers that came out this morning, and I feel pretty confident in the numbers, Illinois averaging 265 to 275, Iowa 218 to 250, Indiana 240 to 260, Missouri 180 to 190. Beans here 68 to 73, Iowa 50 to 71, Indiana 65 to 80. And I have plenty of clients that would confirm all those numbers. But the one that shocked me was I talked to one of my Pennsylvania clients today, and he would be in southeastern Pennsylvania, 97-day corn, a flat 247 dry for an entire farm. I mean, that is just, it's unheard of. He said it's just absolutely unheard of.
That is something in Pennsylvania on that short of corn. Holy smokes, that is a big crop. So I suppose what you're trying to tell us is no matter what they do with the acreage, this is going to be a big crop one way or the other, at least for corn.
Well, that's what it looks like, yes, at least for corn. And you know, the bean yields are exceptionally good, too. But, you know, we're still subject to a lot of things in the northern tier as far as the bean yields go. And, you know, same thing with acres. You know, I was hoping we'd get some indication if Kansas and Nebraska double crop beans were actually in the bean acres. But now we probably won't know that until the very end either. And so I guess what I'm saying, Todd, is be prepared. I'm very concerned about 2015 beans and even 2016 beans. You know, you look back to years when we had this type of a projected carryout, and what some people are talking now is we could even hit 500 million on beans. I don't know if I agree with that or not. But, you know, it wouldn't be uncommon to see a 6 or 7 in front of these numbers. You know, why would a person want to wait to find out? you know, why not just get in here and do something in the marketplace? And you know, Todd, that I talk a lot about options, okay? And then there's guys who say, well, you just don't like futures. Well, that's not true. I like futures. When futures give my clients their best opportunity. So I put together, I wanted to give you an example of what I'm talking about.
Okay.
If you were selling November 15 beans today in the futures, you could get 9.55. You could come in and you could buy a November 9.80 put, which was 25 cents in the money, and you could sell two November $10 calls and actually get that whole thing done, premium and collected premium, for a 7.5 cent credit. Now, what does that mean? Okay, if the market would expire at $9, and I doubt if you're going to find a whole lot of clients out there or a whole lot of people who don't think that beans could be at 9 or below, but let's just say it's at 9. Your futures would give you 55 cents minus one commission. Your option strategy would give you 87.5 cents. How do you get to that? Well, it's 980 is where you took the put position, $9 where the futures are, that's 80, plus a 7.5 cent credit that you receive from selling those two November $10 calls, minus three commissions. From my perspective, doing that strategy with the way that we sit is better for my client. It gives him a possible 30 more cents to be able to work with. And so that's why I just have been thinking about that a lot. You know, guys say, well, you know, in this kind of environment, you just want to sell the futures. Well, that's one of the special things about options. They do give you opportunity to be able to lock in a higher price. Can't do that with futures.
Hey, let's move on to some other things. Thank you for going through that, by the way. It does help to think about how the marketing process works. But as we look today, there are some fundamentals in the marketplace that we still have to deal with, sometimes more in the Northwest Corn Belt than here, but it is a problem here as well, and that's the ability to get trains in. What are you hearing fundamentally about the train situation, locomotive availability, whether we can get cars, and how quickly we can move this crop out of the Midwest?
Yeah. Well, there's a twofold issue here. You know, when you look at trains, one of my guys up in he'd be in southern Minnesota, but he told me the other day they actually got a train into his elevator. So he stopped by and he said, "Hey, I see you got a train in." He said, "That is awesome." And the guy said, "Yeah, we had to pay 60 cents a bushel more for freight than we normally would." So, you know, that's the question I have to ask myself: is this the way of the future? You know, you were at Waseca when you heard that the railroad said, you want 15 trains, we'll give you one. You know, to me, it's a situation where the railroad is now saying, hey, we've got the opportunity to make huge amounts of money hauling oil and doing everything else. If you guys want to use our trains, you're going to have to pay more. And that's the unfortunate part, because that usually gets passed on to us. And I shouldn't say usually, it always some way gets passed on to us. And then you take and you look at, because of the train situation, you know, our elevators right now in many places have very, very high dump charges and very high flat fees for storing anything. They're discouraging people from doing DP. They're discouraging HTAs. Why? It's because they need to own the grain in order to move it out. If you store it, if you DPA it, if you HTA it, you're sitting in a situation where they have to wait for you to actually price it. And so that has another fold to everything, and that is, when you sell them cash, and especially in this environment, they sell the futures to protect themselves from having paid too much. So, you know, you've got guys saying, well, this market's way too low. It can't go any lower. Well, as long as you have hedge pressure and as long as all of the grain that's moving to storage is moving now, which is normally what's going to happen, you're going to have this continuing thing going on. They're buying the grain so that they can move it. They're selling the futures to protect themselves from paying too much. So that's why I think, for a lot of folks, they just never thought they'd see these prices, but it's kind of a self-perpetuating situation. It happens all the time, but it's not normally, you don't normally see them trying to force people to sell across the scale unless they really need the grain. This isn't a case of needing the grain. This is a case of needing to move the grain.
Hey, one final thing. Can you talk about bean basis? Because we have transitioned now from needing beans to, hey, we can use the beans, and the basis has changed dramatically, hasn't it?
Oh, my gosh. What a scare, I'll tell you, because, you know, a week ago in central Illinois, bean basis was plus 275 over the November contract. It is now plus 10 cents over the November contract. So it just goes to show you how things change when the availability is there and how important it is to take advantage of QuickShip or anything else that can be done to maybe, you know, put some more money into our pocket. You know, with the dollar hitting a four-year high today, boy, that's a very, very scary situation in for the long term, you know, because it weakens everything. We've talked about that already, you know, where oil is priced in U.S. dollars everywhere in the world. Higher dollar, higher cost to them, you know, them being Eurozone, Russia, China, Japan, people we depend on to buy from us. Higher dollar is difficult on Mexico, too. So very tough.
Hey, thanks so much, Jackie.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You too, Jackie Vakes, of course, is with Stuart Peterson out of Champaign, Illinois. Now here's what's happening in today's agricultural news. General Mills shareholders have voted down a proposal that would have forced the company to remove genetically modified organisms from its products. During the company's annual shareholders meeting yesterday, a tally of the preliminary vote at the meeting showed more than 97% of the shareholders voted against the proposal. The National Center for Public Policy Research had urged shareholders to reject the resolution. The center's Justin Danoff stated after the vote, it, quote, shows that fact-based scientific consensus can trump emotional appeals that are not tethered to science or reason. The proposal, submitted by a descendant of one of the General Mills founders, Harriet Cosby, had claimed that, quote, we are killing ourselves with GMOs. General Mills CEO Ken Powell said the company stands by the overwhelming research and studies that show GMOs are safe. President Obama has made some commitments on climate change to the United Nations. He did that while speaking to the UN Climate Change Summit. The president made a commitment to what he coined as climate smart agriculture. Obama says there's one issue that will define the contours of this century more dramatically than any other, and that is the urgent and growing threat of a changing climate. He mentioned the U.S. is building international coalitions to drive action, reduce methane emissions from pipelines, and launching a free trade agreement for environmental goods. The White House listed the five commitments that include the United States being a founding member of the group to address food security in the face of climate change. And finally, a new study refutes administration fears that higher prices for ethanol trading credits will cause higher gas prices, and ethanol mandates should therefore be reduced. Iowa State economists claim in a newspaper their findings show concerns about the consumer price of fuel do not justify a reduction in feasible ethanol mandates. The White House and petroleum industry appear to think otherwise. The higher mandates will mean higher prices between refiners for trading credits, resulting in higher consumer prices. At the Renewable Fuels Association, Jeff Cooper suggests that would be true if the fuels market was saturated, but that's not what he says the economist found. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Buy your tickets today for our first ever WILL Ag Farm Assets Conference. It's November the 24th at the Marriott Hotel on the Illinois State University campus in Normal, Illinois. In addition to our great marketing panels on corn, cash grain, and soybeans, we've got keynotes on crop insurance, including the ARCPLC decision and farmland values. The cost is $25 and includes lunch and parking in the hotel parking garage. Get your tickets now at 800-898-1065 or on our secure website at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org.
Up next, a story about soybeans and China, provided to us by Red River Farm Network's Jody Hemster out of Grand Forks, North Dakota. She's a member of the NAFB and says the U.S. Soybean Export Council member Bob Metz from her area left for China early Tuesday morning. Metz, she says, will be representing U.S. soybean farmers at the JCI conference.
There's a huge conference that attracts about 500 of the best agricultural businessmen in China, and it would be kind of an equivalent to what Informa would be in the United States. So it's quite a conference. It's very, very well done. And then, of course, most of our customers are there trying to understand, you know, what's happening in the world, what's happening on markets, And it's great that we have an opportunity as soybean growers to be part of that agenda and to get a chance to speak with them.
Matt says he'll be bringing good news about this year's U.S. soybean crop.
We have a great abundance of soybeans. We've got a great harvest coming up. It'll be at a price that will be very favorable to the Chinese. That means that they'll stay in business and continue to buy a lot of our soybeans.
And Matt says the Chinese economy continues to grow with more people moving from the country to the cities.
I believe last year, for the first time, more people lived in the city in China than in the countryside. The last I read, about 55% now live in the city. When they go from the countryside, eating out of gardens and such, to living in the city, they double their meat consumption. And of course, when you're talking about feeding poultry and swine, you're talking about feeding soybean meal and corn.
That's Bob Metz of the U.S. Soybean Export Council. The 10th annual JCI conference runs this Thursday and Friday in China. Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Wednesday afternoon, and Pete Peterson at the Anderson's Climbers facility now joins us to take up the cash grain market. He is in the Logansport, Indiana, or nearby there. Thanks so much, Pete, for taking the time. Are you busy there at the elevator?
Oh, yes. Early harvest, but starting to pick up every day.
And so corn, soybeans, or both?
Both. Our climbers facility here at the ethanol plant, we're taking in quite a bit of corn, a little bit wetter than we like to see, but it's still starting. Everybody's trying to get a jump on it. Our Delphi facility down the road, we're taking in a lot of soybeans. The weather finally was fit enough to get across the fields.
And what is the moisture level on each, on average, for the most part?
Corn, I would say average right now, straight out of the field, in the range of 25 to 30 on corn. And on the beans, we finally got down to the point in time we call them somewhat dry, in the 12 to 14 range.
Somewhat dry, there you go.
Yes.
Hey, on the corn, exactly. when it comes into the ethanol facility, do you have to dry that before you start grinding it, or can you just take it in off the street at 25% of the facility?
Think of it as basically a grain elevator in itself, where you got to dry it down to the point in time. Not all the grain that comes across scale goes directly in the process.
Right.
A little bit wetter grain can go in the process, but we have to shrink the grain down or dry it down to the point where it's actually storable, mm-hmm. because, like I said, a lot of the grain goes into storage where we can use it and when we need it.
How much storage do you have there at the Climbers Ethanol facility?
We're at 3 million, so it's one of those things where I think in general, it's never enough, but it's enough to get us by.
How much has basis broken in the last week?
Basis over the last few days has broke, we've been 25 cents. Right now we're at 15 under. And, it's just one of those things where it's all the premiums continue to drift. The biggest swings we've seen has been in soybeans. Seems like we break 50 cents to a dollar every day. Our local premiums now are back down to basically even basis. A few processors are paying 10 to 20 cents over.
Thanks so much, Pete.
Okay, thank you.
Pete Peterson is with the Anderson's Climbers facility in Logansport, Indiana.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
It's National Cherries Jubilee Day. The dessert that today is made with cherries, liquor, and vanilla ice cream was first served at one of Queen Victoria's Jubilee celebrations. The Queen was reportedly partial to cherries. The original dish, though, didn't contain ice cream, but was meant to accompany venison, especially red deer or roebuck. On this day in agricultural history in 1870, George Claude was born. A French engineer, he invented the neon light. He first displayed the new light on December 10th of 1910 in Paris. The first U.S. firm to take advantage of the neon sign, was a Packard car dealership in Los Angeles. In 1911, Earl Ovington became the first airmail pilot. His first load included 640 letters and 1,280 postcards, all tucked on the plane floor between his legs. In 1920, Mickey Rooney was born, one of our favorite Rooney roles as Shocky Carter in Hoosier Schoolboy. In the film, Mickey plays a farm boy who sticks by his alcoholic father and is helped by a teacher in getting his dad a job driving a milk truck. And in 1923, Nancy Green died. She was hired to represent and demonstrate Aunt Jemima pancake mix. At the 1893 Columbian Exposition in Chicago, the exhibit was so popular that police had to control the crowds at the Aunt Jemima booth. Fair officials awarded her a medal and proclaimed her Pancake Queen. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Learned Seed Service supports agricultural programming on WILL as an additional service to its customers. Learned Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers throughout East Central Illinois via the Asgrow on-demand bulk soybean handling system. Learned Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated joins us to take a look at the weather forecast for the Midwest, the nation, and the planet. Let's start in the Corn Belt, Drew, where farmers really are beginning to shuck some corn and to combine some soybeans. And I suspect that will be hastened as good weather continues across the belt this week. Am I right?
Absolutely. This is as good as it gets, and we will continue to have some very good conditions taking us into the weekend coming up, especially for areas that are east of the Mississippi River. I don't think there's going to be any need to be worrying about precipitation through the first part of next week in the central and eastern parts of the region. Out in the west, we'll have a new cool front that will show up across the region probably Monday and Tuesday. And that frontal system will generate some scattered showers and thunderstorms and slow things down a little bit from Kansas up to Minnesota. And eventually that frontal system will work its way through the eastern portions of the Midwest as we get into midweek next week. And it's probably going to be followed by a fairly decent shot of cold air, but what will probably end up happening is we'll end up bringing a second frontal system through, so there might be a little bit more of a delay between the first round of precipitation and when the coldest air comes along. But by the time we finish out the week next week, going into the following weekend, it's going to be turning a lot colder across the region. We will expect the precipitation with this first front to be relatively light, maybe a couple tenths to three quarters of an inch. Again, that'll be early in the week. And then when the coldest air comes through, we'll probably get a second punch of cold air, or actually a second punch of precipitation that will impact the lower Mississippi River Basin and the lower eastern Midwest in a more significant manner.
How cold?
Well, I think we will see frost and freezes back across parts of the Midwest again. It's a little soon to get too specific, but I am expecting to see freezes back into the northern half of the region for sure, and maybe into some central areas as well.
Daytime highs will be what?
Oh, we're in the coldest air, which will probably be in that second weekend, 10 days from now, maybe some 50 and 60 degree highs across a large part of the Midwest.
Oh, that'll be sweatshirt and jacket time, and the farmers will be shucking corn and just smiling as they bring in a big crop, despite the fact it has a really low price. How about around the rest of the planet, other places we need to check in on, whether that be on the hard red winter wheat belt here in the United States or somewhere else?
Well, I think while you mentioned the hard red winter wheat areas, and they're getting a good mix of rain and sunshine, they're actually still a little bit on the dry side in some locations, not in Texas, but in Kansas and Colorado, and we will see significant rain in those areas before this next 10-day period is over and some significant amounts may occur. It's also raining rather significantly right now today as we speak in New South Wales, Australia, very, very important wheat, barley, and canola production area, and this moisture is going to help boost those crops all the more. They're going to have a very good production year, I think. And it looks like Ukraine is another area that got too dry in the last few weeks, and there was some concern about planting the winter wheat and rye for 2015, but things are turning around dramatically now. It's rained significantly in the last 2 days, and the ground is favorably moist, and those farmers will be going like gangbusters.
That's Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Helps us wrap up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.